chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to beg out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, there'll be no doubt when you see you are. Rest make dab in the middle of it.
The secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is not with us during this second hour. We've got coming up in about 22 minutes here, Mario Lopez. He's the president of Hispanic Leadership Fund. And my gosh, that fund is a Hispanic-oriented group for a Hispanic community. But it's one of the most moderate, conservative, and sound advising groups for the Hispanic community. I mean, you'll have to hear, and the interview was pre-recorded, so it's about 35 minutes long. But so I have to sort of fill in here a little bit at the beginning. But you just have to listen to this carefully. Seldom do you hear someone from the Hispanic community like Mario Lopez. He's the president of the Hispanic Leadership Fund, express certain clear, very, very clear solutions to our problems today. Usually you'll hear some very, very, liberal type of statements from the Hispanic community in general. But he really says it like it is and puts out there very, very interesting solutions and very, very real solutions. In fact, he's saying that some of the other, this like global warming, it was a far-ranging conversation. We first started off with the EPA forcing the states to present the plans for this carbon footprint on their coal-burning power plants. And he would suggest that our governor, Greg Abbott, not submit a plan at this time. I think it'd be more as a delaying type of tactic. But the plan, the EPA, we've got to get in there and change that whole plan if we can, because they were going to shut down a majority of our power plants all of them eventually that are carbon-based or coal-driven, for energy. There's a lot of things. Speaker Boehner resigned. The UN is hosting Pope Francis there. He was a couple of days ago, he was visiting with the president at the White House and gave a speech out there on the South Lawn. Yesterday, he addressed the joint session of Congress. He's espousing support of this global warming-oriented sustainability concept. Now, that particular concept, and you'd have to pick it up a little bit on our first hour this evening, tonight. But originally, that concept in general was fomented by the and formulated and so forth originally by the Club of Rome. The Club of Rome was a high-level group, think tank group, that was founded in 1968 in Rome, Italy. And Giovanni Agnelli, owner of Fiat Corporation, Aurelio Pesci, these kind of people, Dennis and Donella Meadows, had quite an input into a later book called Limits to Growth. But anyway, the sustainability deal came out of Rome. Now we have a pope, a sitting pope, Jesuit type pope coming out of Argentina originally, coming to America and reiterating a plan that this high level elitist group called the Club of Rome first put together, coming out of the Club of Rome with a book that established this sustainability called Limits to Growth. There's great controversy today whether global warming is a valid dynamic or not. And some groups are calling for persecution of people that are against the global warming. As you listen to this conversation later, Mario Lopez says that this closing down of these plants will have a minimal impact. And these are coming from their own studies on this global warming problem that is being always put forward. So there's great controversy about global warming. The Pope, who commands a billion followers or more, is coming to the UN speaking, and he's in full favor of it. It's actually, there's a new plan. Patrick Wood and I discussed it a week or so ago, and it's called 2030 Agenda. And the 2030 Agenda is like Agenda 21 on steroids. Also, what came off today, Nikki Rapana, who's founded along with her daughter, Nartica, the communitarian protest group and writings out of Alaska, just put up a note on Facebook that some Catholic school somewhere in the country is teaching communitarianism in the classroom in that Catholic school. We have other reports from Patrick Wood in these mega religion churches like Rick Warren's that it was picked up by a Buford who gave consulting to the church by way of Peter Drucker. And Peter Drucker, according to Patrick Wood, introduced the idea of communitarianism into some of our mega churches and mega religions. The problem with this whole thing is we're seeing a transformation of America occur, not only America, but the world in general at large. So we're seeing dynamics like this global warming and political things. Not only is the global warming, it's being used in a political way. And the reason why is that they've created this idea way back decades ago of a world citizen. In other words, instead of becoming an American citizen, you should become a world citizen and then take care of Mother Earth, Gaia. And so that concept has two levels. One is the theory of Gaia, promulgated by Lovelace out of UK, and that has very real scientific basis for a feedback mechanism that the Earth has over long periods of time to right any imbalances that might occur during a set period, say. And so that's one concept. But the other concept is one more based upon the ecological, global warming sustainability movement. And it also has this new age connotation. And that's that Gaia or Gaia is the goddess of earth, the Greek goddess of earth. And so the earth has become a symbol of worship, see. And so you can't do anything to harm the earth, and then that dovetails perfectly into global warming being used as a mechanism through sustainability to start shutting down industries. And this is going to destroy our business in America. Now, Mario Lopez later on during this hour will explain what his group, his Hispanic Leadership Fund, is doing, and they're all for creating more businesses and more entrepreneurship, not only within the Hispanic community, but within U.S. citizenry at large. So this is refreshing to see a Hispanic group that really has a handle on these things. It's not just falling for the very liberal type of proposals that are out there. The Pope's visit, we have also other things going on in the country. It resembles that we have a period that we're going into of greater and greater numbers of shootings, whether they're school or church shootings that we've had or whatever out there, just, families are murdering their whole families in some cases. The Gladio, Todd Fletcher, when he was still alive, and I had conversations on the Gladio program that came out of Italy. Actually, it came out of the NATO countries. And it was it started with the Left Behind series of a movement operations after World War II, and it evolved into what we term now Gladio. And Gladio were false flag operations of terrorism, and then blamed on the Red Brigade and other very radical leftist groups or otherwise in the countries in the NATO countries. We've seen a rising Russia now that is becoming more aggressive in response to our aggressions and our very aggressive stance in Eastern Europe and our buildup there. So what do the Russians do? They come into Syria and start expanding this airfield in Syria. And they have troops on the ground now that are evidently being reported fighting with the Syrian government against these so-called rebels who we're backing. We spent $500 million and got four or five rebels. I mean, that's $100 million per rebel. That's just totally corruption and thievery of the monies that were spent for that program. We have Turkey in there that's providing material and sanction to the Syrian war. We've got ISIS in there. We're using the word ISIS. You know, that's probably become the more commonly term for that new Al-Qaeda breakoff group there that supposedly, according to Greg Ford, who I've had on the program a couple of times, he had under arrest Baghdadi, who has become the leader of ISIS in that Syrian-Iraq campaign area. And so, and then that would give substance to the reports that the United States, along with our CIA and our secretly, have been supplying ISIS with arms. Veterans Today has news out of their site that the Israelis have been helping take out some of the attacks on ISIS that are being put together by the Syrian government. So don't know if that is true or not. Veterans Today, you got to look at that site very carefully. Sometimes they have some very insightful things, and other times there are reports there that would be hard to agree to. The Syrian situation, there have been recent reports now that there's going to be an exercise, a naval exercise by the Russians in the Eastern Mediterranean. Obama has allowed, or this administration has allowed, a vacuum to exist, and he's going in. The Russians are going in, not only establishing a force there on the ground and reopening and expanding their air base there, and they've already had access to a harbor there, a base, a port facilities for some of their fleet there. So they're going to have in the near future exercises in the Eastern Mediterranean. They're beginning to establish a presence in the Eastern Mediterranean, and they are on the ground, boots on the ground in Syria today. These are real things that are happening. You've got the Brzezinski and Kissinger, Henry Kissinger, you know, types of proposals that have resulted. And Henry Kissinger, as I understand it, is consultant to Pope Francis on foreign affairs. So you've had the American foreign policies have been dominated by the neocons, not only through the George W. Bush administration, but some of those people are still exerting foreign policy on through Barack Obama's administration. And so it's a very hawkish type of view of foreign relations, foreign affairs. You have continuing attacks that are occurring, continuing support of the Syrian rebels at $500 million for four or five rebels. Are you kidding me? You have continuing supply of ISIS, probably by some of our, secret agendas, black operations or whatever. Recently, we've had some hits over there on some of their car bomb factories or whatever, but we have not seen any level of the takedown of ISIS, except for these recent videos that were released showing by the Defense Department, showing the secondary explosions of a so-called car bomb factory in Syria itself, operated by ISIS. Sadat is beginning to secure more and more support by he always had support too by Hezbollah, but and the Iranians. But now that Russia is on firm footing in there, and they're building up, and they've got fighters that were reported just they flew in to Syria with their transponders off. They said, "Oh yeah, we knew they were there, and we had them on radar on you know our satellite systems and all that. We knew they were coming in, but the mere fact that they were cutting off their transponders, you know, if that's what the report said, would indicate that." The Russians were coming in on a stealth basis, so they're wanting to hide somewhat there and give cover to some of their operations in the area as such. We're seeing a dangerous situation develop very quickly in the Middle East and in Syria in particular. The ISIS is still there. We're evidently supplying them, or now we're bombing them. There's cross currents here that are just terrible. And the outcome can be nothing but good. But excuse me, I mean, it can be nothing but bad. The Turks are in there in a big way. The Kurds are there's attacks by the Turks on the Kurdish forces. They've been at odds in eastern Turkey for decades. One of the things that I saw recently also sort of uncovered is that. There's an Armenian, cover up. There's the Armenian massacre that's debated at times. You're really movers and shakers in Washington that support Turkey militarily and politically. They advocate a policy. Oh, that wasn't genocide. That's way overblown. It never occurred, and so forth. But there might be a reason why. That did occur, and it was actually carried out, by some would say, by the Young Turks. But the Young Turks, followed by Ataturk, were Masonic-based, okay? And way, way back, we're talking about a leader there coming out of Babylon of Nimrod, supposedly was killed by an arrow, a very lucky shot by the leader that founded, actually, Armenia later on. Would this be the retaliation centuries back, virtually or millenniums back, against the takedown of Nimrod, supposedly by the future founder of the Armenian state? Who knows? But these things sometimes can be possibilities that we should look into. So I would advise my listeners to go in, dig down into the Armenian history, go back, study Nimrod and his history. And there was evidently the Armenians that became the Armenian states, and Nimrod had a great battle by a lake. And at that lake, then it was reported that Nimrod was killed by an arrow by a great bowman that eventually founded the state of Armenia. Would this be why later on the Masons would go and attack, the Armenians and massacre them like they did? And I think it's widely accepted by most experts that did occur, okay? But these are something to delve into. I'm not saying that has been proved and so forth, but we need to look at history like this to gain a greater understanding today of what's going on all around us. So it's something that we just cannot ignore. You know, today if we look at the Roman, let's just take the Knights of Malta. They're in Rome with two sites. They have a sovereign state. They issue their own passports. They issue passports to help the Nazis come out of post-Nazi Germany, see, to escape to South America and into America. Paperclip has proven that, Operation Paperclip. But the Knights of Malta issued some of those false passports and identities to help some of those people get out. Now, today, almost every CIA director becomes a Knight of Malta. Supposedly, or according to writings I've read, the Grand Master of the Knights of Malta is a cardinal in the church. And he's only 8 minutes from the Vatican. The black pope is, or the head of the Jesuits. The Society of Jesus, which are the Jesuits, elect their own leader, and he's called the Black Pope. Well, he his office is at the Church of Jesus, which is about 8 minutes from the Vatican. You have that involved. You have the Knights of Malta that have two sites there that have their own passports. The Vatican today is a sovereign state within Rome. It issues its own passports. You've got just a collage, and then the Pope is coming here and speaking to the UN and the President. In some cases, he's almost chastising them. It sounds like in ways, but in a very subtle way. So this is one faction. You also have a faction that put Israel together. It would be stating to be the Zionist faction. They actually own banks. They own things. They can make things happen. They control the Mossad and things like this. So they are a major factor. I listened to a debate about who is in control. Is it the Jesuits through the Catholic Church, or is it the Zionist faction? See, but they're tied all together through the Masonic system. So that's what you have to look at, is the highest levels are involved in all of these groups, see. And so if you start looking at it in that way, your eyes just open up and you say, oh my gosh, there are bigger things than just the church and just the Zionist movement, see. There are things that go way back millenniums that explain exactly what is going on. And the power structure is not that easy to look at. John Coleman wrote a book called Committee of 300, and it sets out in there the Venetian houses. The Catholics are involved. The Bilderberg group, of course, is at the top of the management group, it looks like, yearly, because Kissinger's there. He gets a better hotel room than some of the queens that are princes and princesses that attend. So to watch him and what he's talking about is important. Brzezinski's very, very important, being a very strong hawkish type, but from the left, from the Democratic left. So he's also very important to study and to pay attention to. They speak at the Woodrow Wilson, Foundation. They speak here and there. And you just got to start looking in some of their speeches and so forth to get a good idea of where they're coming from. Well, look, what's coming up next is Mario Lopez. It's a recorded interview. He's the president of the Hispanic Leadership Fund. And we just can't say any more good things about Mario Lopez and his group up there. They're doing a marvelous job. It's a fresh breeze to come from a Hispanic group. And anyway, so that's coming up in just a few seconds. So hang in there and don't change your dial. Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte is not with us on this second hour, but we've got a fine guest. Mario Lopez is the president of Hispanic Leadership Fund, and I looked over their issues, and my gosh, I believe they're right on spot on most of the issues that are confronting this country today. Welcome to our program, Mario Lopez.
Thank you so much for having me on.
I tell you what, we're going to cover today. Tell us a little bit about your own self and your own background and how you came to be the president of this Hispanic Leadership Fund.
Yes, thank you. Well, the Hispanic Leadership Fund is an advocacy organization that's based in D.C., and we work here in the nation's capital and also in state capitals around the country to try to promote policies that will help families by furthering liberty, opportunity, and prosperity for all Americans.
Okay, and today in particular, you have one particular issue that is a burning issue, and that's the EPA carbon footprint, closing down of power plants. Is that what y'all are concentrating on here in the last few weeks and so forth, months?
Yeah, that's definitely one of the issues we're keeping a close eye on. They're calling it the clean power plant, but I think it's properly named as the cruel power plant, because it's going to raise energy prices for everyone and have a particularly bad effect on low-income folks, senior citizens, minorities. It's just bad all the way around.
Yeah. In other words, what you do, you're an advocacy for a community there that are trying to protect their interest and try to preserve the middle class. Has the middle class been under assault the last few decades?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, you know, the thing that's most lacking, of course, is opportunity. And there's times when government sadly squelches the opportunity, what opportunities do exist. And this, the EPA's Clean Power Plan, or Cruel Power Plan, as I call it, is the prime example of that. I mean, we're talking about skyrocketing electricity rates. And Texas is projected to be somewhere between 15 and, I believe, 60%, just on individuals. So think about that. Think about your electricity bill skyrocketing, and that's the effect that it's going to have. And the worst part about it is that this doesn't even, you know, they say we want to clean the environment, we want cleaner air. Well, the EPA's own data shows that the impact on what they call global warming is going to be 0.002 of 1 degree over the next 85 years. So by the year 2100, it will, you know, if we implement these regulations, it's going to have an effect that's so minimal that it's barely even worth talking about. I mean, you're not going to be able to feel one iota of difference in terms of temperature. And so we ask ourselves, I mean, what's the point of this? I mean, if it's not even accomplishing, you know, this combating rising temperatures, or so we're told, then what's the point? And the answer is really that this is an ideological agenda that President Obama's EPA wants to foist on the American people. And it's sad. It's a travesty for working families out there.
Is there a disconnect from the actual law passed in many cases that Congress passes and then the writing of these regulations? How does that work exactly?
Right. Well, there's a huge disconnect because a lot of folks believe that the EPA is actually breaking past environmental laws in order to promulgate this regulation, right? So this isn't a law that's in Congress. This is the executive branch, which is supposed to carry out the laws, and they're basically writing a new law, going around Congress to do so, and that's why there have been, you know, states that have noticed this. I believe the last count is 16 states are filing a lawsuit against the EPA based on this regulation. We're urging more states to hop on board that. There are governors who are wisely choosing not to submit their own state plans to the EPA, which the EPA is requesting, because there's no penalty for not doing so. And in fact, you know, there can only be pain for, you know, the citizens of every state if their governors choose to submit a plan. Because once those are implemented, even if the regulation is found to be unlawful, they're basically going to be stuck with it. So, you know, we think that that's, at a minimum, states should not submit their plans, but hopefully more and more hop on this lawsuit.
Yeah, you've had to confront these really large institutions like the EPA and other federal agencies and so forth over the years, and it's quite a battle, isn't it? Because don't they have internal lawyers and people on fee and stuff that you have to go up against sometimes in these
battles? I mean, it's Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, you know, lawsuits aren't a quick thing these days, and especially when you're dealing with, you know, a huge government agency like the EPA and all these different states involved. So it is a long process, but it's a process that we believe is worth fighting for,
right?
You know, because these regulations are just crazy.
Yeah, I mean, it's administrative law taken to an nth degree that begins to be pretty crazy, doesn't it? Huh?
Yep, that's exactly right. And again, the important thing is for folks to understand that not only is there no environmental gain at all from these regulations, but we're talking about an increase in as I said, an increase in electricity bills, an increase in prices and goods and services, because businesses rely on energy to create everything, right? I can't think of anything, even service industry need energy. And so prices on everyday items are gonna go up. Those same businesses are gonna not just pass those costs on through prices, but are also gonna be hit to the effect that they're gonna have to start laying people off. So it's going to be job losses. You increase poverty around the country, and the EPA administrator basically admitted this. She said, we know that poor people are going to be most hard hit by it. And she used this, like, really weird, vague language to kind of imply that, you know, it's okay because, you know, we're just going to have more welfare. Increasing government dependency is not the answer to this. I mean, the answer is to have people have more opportunity and be able to provide a way and find a way to provide for themselves and their families, which is, in the end, is good for the country. If more people are doing that, that is what's going to be more, create more prosperity and help normal folks around the country.
Right. Y'all have, you support small businesses, I see, that your foundation does, your leadership fund. And that's really a key, isn't it, to helping small businesses get, established and hiring employees that, what, small business employees, two-thirds of the people in the country? They provide two-thirds of the jobs?
Yeah, two-thirds of the job creation is done through small businesses. And a lot of people don't realize that. They sort of assume, that these big corporations are the ones that employ the most people, but that's not the case. And that's a good thing, because we want more people to be empowered. We want more people to find their own way, providing for themselves and their families, creating jobs in their communities. And anything that destroys small business is it's just bad for the country as a whole.
Yeah, and that's what I like about your organization, Hispanic Leadership Fund, is that you address the real problems in this country. Now, this EPA is out of control at times, and they're just trying to further their power, but they're being fueled by this global warming, which is in dispute, is it not?
Yes, you hear a lot that, there's consensus.
On both sides,
global
yeah.
Global warming and that, but no. Well, that's what they want to say, but the fact is over the last 18 years, there has been no measurable warming whatsoever.
Well, that's right, and even the north.
Satellite data, which is the most accurate
right.
data possible.
And the ice on the north and the south pole have been expanding during some of these periods that they're claiming global warming is operative. So they don't have the facts down, and there's all kinds of emails floating around between consultants to the UN that have been bogus and then been, the corruption level out there is what you're fighting also, is it not?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. There's no question. I mean, but look, even if you say, okay, that's something I don't want to believe in. I believe that global warming is happening and, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, fine, let's take your face value. But again, let's go back to this. The EPA's own data says that these particular regulations aren't going to have any effect whatsoever on global warming. So their own numbers say that this isn't going to accomplish anything in terms of warming. So then you have to ask yourself, why? Why are they doing this? And unfortunately, their words and actions, starting with the president, point to a very radical agenda that's looking to destroy the energy industry in this country. And that's just, it's a shame. It's beyond shameful.
Yeah, you're on that conservative, moderate right side, and your Hispanic leadership fund there is right on these issues. But are the people in general asleep to some of these things, and they've been taken over by global warming and scared to death and all that, or what?
Sure, I mean there are a lot of people like that, and that's why it's important for us to get out there with the facts and show people. With actual evidence of what is happening in Washington, you know, what the numbers actually show. And not just on this issue, but, you know, on a whole host of issues, because, you know, people need to have the right information in front of them. And when they do, by and large, we see that the people come around. You know, it's I think the other side sort of preys on people with have a low information available to them, and you know, and that's wrong.
Yeah, it's become an emotional thing, and I've seen several groups approach the Justice Department or whoever and saying these people that are against global warming should be prosecuted. Things are getting sort of out of hand at times, you know. I mean, I see a country that's breaking up here.
That's the next frontier.
Yeah, I mean, I see a country that's breaking up before our very eyes at times. Dave?
Yeah, it's really a shame. I mean, when you want to, you know, prosecute people for what they're thinking and what their opinions are, I mean, that's not First Amendment free speech. That's a direct assault on the Constitution. And that's something that, you know, everyone should be in favor of. You know, I think it was Voltaire who said, you know, I don't agree with what you say, but I'll defend to the death your right to say it. You
exactly.
know, we need more of that. We
yes.
need more of that attitude. Have, okay, you know, we have disagreement, that's fine, but we can have a respectful, vigorous debate about it. You know, we don't need to prosecute people who have differing opinions, you know, whether it's right, left, or middle, or anything else.
Right, exactly. I mean, just like this thing is happening in the universities about these triggering announcements or what warnings and things, and this you know what I mean, microaggressions. I don't know if you've gotten into some of those things, but it's stymieing free speech on the campus, you know. And they're all defending these feelings
yeah,
of the
yeah,
students.
Exactly
the feeling,
right.
The feelings have to be protected. They have got to be in a little cocoon, you know. Well, it used to be the university was a place to speak out and argue and debate both sides of everything, you know. And that's becoming a censorship.
Right, absolutely. And you know,
game,
we're
you know.
About...
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, there's a difference between civil, wanting discourse to be civil, and you don't want to just unnecessarily insult people, you know, and I can understand that, and I think most reasonable people say, you know, yeah, that's right. You know, we can have a debate that's passionate, that's vigorous. You know, we don't need to call people names and that kind of thing. Okay, fine. But in terms of completely eliminating, you know, free speech and taking, you know, these impossible standards, just to protect their ideology, I mean, it's really a symbol of the fact that they're not confident in their ideas. You know, when people who need to rely on government and the law to prosecute other people whom they disagree with, you know, that's a very telltale sign that, you know, we can't defend our ideas, therefore we have to shut you down or we have to prosecute you or, you know, throw you in jail or something for having these thoughts. You know, that's just a giveaway that they're ideologically bankrupt, frankly.
Right. You, some of the issues are all their taxes and the economy. Where do y'all stand on that? I'm just going to take
well, we
off.
Believe that lower taxes and lower amounts of regulation are good for the economy and good for job creation and good for the country as large. And that's what we want to see. And you know, history has proven to us that big, intrusive, you know, massive government spending doesn't accomplish the things that they say they want to accomplish, and in fact, most of the time hurts.
Right. Now, the next issue here is small business. We've said before 2/3 of the jobs are created by small business, but where do you stand on that, your fund?
Yeah, well, we want to see... policies that promote, you know, small business opportunity and small business growth. We think that that's good, you know, not just for the Hispanic community, who we communicate with a lot, obviously, but, you know, for the country as a whole. That's what we want to see is more entrepreneurship. We want to see more people able to provide for themselves and their families. And that's what really government's role should be, is to create an environment where people can go out and pursue their own version of the American dream. That's really what it comes down to. And when we do that, and when we have done that in the past, it's been tremendously successful.
Yeah, there have been some of these incubator systems with these 3D, you know, things that can make 3D objects and stuff. And that's the beginning of helping young entrepreneurs establish businesses and new inventions. So stuff is happening, but outside of government. I see, you know, like the GoFundMe and all that indie, you know, the private funding is beginning to create a lot of businesses and so forth.
Oh, yeah, that's 100% right.
So that's outside of government. Everybody's looking.
The more technology we create, the more innovation there is.
Yes. I mean, everybody's looking for government all the time, and now there's private funding mechanisms that we didn't have a few years ago. And that will, you know, help entrepreneurship. Okay, how about education? Y'all say every child in America should benefit from a quality education. And what is your stance on education in general?
Sure. Well, we want to see, we think that education has worked best historically in our great country when it's been decentralized, when it's left up to local communities. We'd like to see every parent in America be able to have the right to send their child to a school of their own choosing, whether it be public, private, or what have you. We strongly believe in parental choice in education, and I think that's really the key, one of the key things to fostering a free and prosperous society is making sure that those opportunities are available to everyone, no matter what your economic background, no matter what your color, and no matter what your creed. That's what is a cornerstone of creating a free and prosperous society.
Okay.
And we think that, you know, it starts with education.
Yeah, you're dropping out a little bit. It's going to come across okay, I think. And now we get down the next one, government and regulation. Boy, we're regulated to death, are we not?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And these EPA regs are a prime example of that. I mean, it's, you know, how you can look people in the eye with a straight face and say that this is going to help when it's not only not going to have any effect on warming whatsoever, but going to destroy jobs and raise prices, increase poverty, and increase government dependency. I mean, it's really just a shame. And the people out there have, the more they find out about this, you know, the more frustrated they get, and rightly so. And we're encouraging folks to channel that, to contact, you know, their state representatives or governors and urge them to, you know, for their states to not submit these EPA plans to make sure that if possible that their state hops on these state lawsuits against the EPA. I mean, this is a prime example of government gone completely crazy.
Right. Now, how about your immigration position on immigration? You say here on your site, we believe that our nation's legal immigration system is broken. Elaborate on that a little bit. Tell us what your view is on that.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, this is a hot button issue that's, you know, playing out right now in like the presidential primaries and that. And we think that, you know, the most important thing is to solve this issue. You know, Washington, politicians in Washington have been talking about this for 30 years and they've yet to do anything. And, you know, the reality is that the basic ideas of how to fix this are not that hard. I mean, first of all, we have to have border security. I mean, that's obvious to anyone. But second of all, we want to make sure that we have a functioning system for legal immigration, because that contributes to the illegal immigration problem. And so, you know, when you have very little number of visas available for low-skill workers, for example, when it takes those workers 10, 12, 15, 20 years to go through the legal immigration process, I mean, that's crazy. You know, did you think about what would happen? I mean, everyone, you know, hates the DMV, for example, right? Because you go there, you stand in line, and it's the epitome of government bureaucracy. Can you imagine waiting like 12 years for a driver's license? I mean, it would be, you know, it could be complete chaos. But some of those same systems apply to our immigration policy are what's created a lot of the chaos with that. So we think that, you know, when you combine border security and a functioning legal process, that's going to go a long way towards helping, you know, solve this problem once and for all, get government towards working towards doing what it should be doing, and doing it right and efficiently, or as efficiently as possible. And those two things combined are going to go a long way towards helping solve this issue.
Yeah, the last issue was border security. So y'all stand, your position is that we need to increase our border security over what we've seen in the past. Is that right?
Sure. I mean, we need to increase it and have it be working better and have it be working smarter. We think that that's a key component of any plan. I mean, it's a border security, it's a national security issue, and we need to make sure that, that we have whatever effective measures there can be, you know, along the border. But it really, as I said before, I mean, it goes hand in hand with the functioning legal process, because the less people you have crossing illegally, the easier it is for our men and women, who are bravely protecting our border every day, the easier we make their jobs. Because instead of, you know, when the people who are coming here for work and opportunity are channeled through a legal system, then the folks on, the men and women on the borders can focus more of their efforts on what we feel is like the real bad guys, you know, the guys that are trafficking humans for to enslave people in prostitution, the people who are bringing drugs, the people who might be bringing weapons, you know, those kinds of folks. We need to have more of our resources concentrated on that, and that it becomes a lot easier when the other people are channeled through a legal system, to be able to come through lawfully.
Yeah, you make some very important points, Mario Lopez. In other words, the legal system needs reforming to make it more streamlined to where you can get driver's licenses quicker to maintain a living in this country. Things like that are just archaic, are they not? Some of the old immigration laws are not functioning properly, even for people that want to legally, work in the system, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, our unfortunately, most of our immigration laws were lobbied for by big union bosses in the 60s and 70s. I mean, by and large, we have an immigration policy that benefits the big union bosses and that they wrote essentially themselves years ago. And that's really, it's inefficient and undesirable to have, you know, that kind of big, massive government bureaucracy involved. You know, now there needs to be basic checks, background checks and things. I mean, we don't, you know, I'm not advocating for like a free-for-all here, but that process needs to be channeled in the right way. It needs to be focused, and it needs to be a lot more efficient than it is, because, you know, I mean, the immigration bureaucracy is no different than any other government bureaucracy. It's unwieldy. It's slow. It's burdensome. You know, when it takes people 20 years to immigrate legally, that's just not something that works. It's not something that's desirable. And in the end, it helps create this illegal immigration problem in a very, direct way. And so that's why those two things are linked. If we want to have more border security, we need to have a better legal way.
Right. It used to be, when I was growing up in the 50s and 60s here in Austin, Texas, the employers were fined for employing illegal aliens. They dropped that years ago, I guess, so that opened it up. And then what you're saying is that the existing immigration law provides too long a period to legally become a citizen. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. That's right. And there is, supposed to be some internal enforcement, and that part, should also be ramped up and streamlined. And I think that will help as well. But in the end, if we want to solve this overall problem that everyone's so frustrated about, justifiably so, then I think that, that combination that I mentioned is really what's going to be the key. And so that's what we want to see at a more politicians, because normally, they stress either one or the other. And it's really, that's kind of a false choice. I mean, it's not, you know, you can only have border security or a functioning legal system. You know, we can't have both. We are a strong enough, prosperous enough country to where we can have both those things. And in fact, both those things together are the only thing that's really going to solve this issue. And that's what the American people want overwhelmingly. They want a solution. They want politicians to stop talking about this over and over again, get down, roll up their sleeves, get to work, fix this thing, you know, and then apply that same mentality to every other problem. Yeah.
Right. The sanctuary thing is out there. The liberal Democrats are pushing for more immigration any way they can get it, I guess. Donald Trump, what would be your comments on Donald Trump? Did he hit a nerve on immigration and then people really were attracted to him because of that one big issue or what?
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, he definitely struck a nerve in terms of, you know, people are out there are frustrated. Everyone is so frustrated with this issue, you know, because
right.
of the reasons I mentioned. I mean, politicians go round and round and talk about this stuff, and they never get down to actually doing it. You know, and so we get that frustration. I mean, we're frustrated too. Everyone is, right? So, you know, but the question is, okay, what can be done, you know, and we think that combination, it's not just words, you know, because for Donald Trump or any other politician to, you know, say these things, I mean, that's nice. You know, he may say things that are politically incorrect, and, you know, I guess that's fine as far as it goes, but in terms of actually getting down to nitty-gritty policy ideas, he's fallen woefully short, but we are glad to see that other candidates in the GOP primary race are kind of picking up the slack on that end and proposing, you know, real concrete solutions to a lot of these things, because we think at the end of the day that's the better route.
Yeah, he's stimulating a conversation and a debate on immigration, which is what we needed for a long time. And your organization is doing that, and then Donald Trump is coming in there activating a debate. So both dynamics, I think, will help us move towards a reasonable solution on immigration.
Well, we hope so.
But Congress there, now, okay, the Pope's visit is taking place right now, and I think he's already spoken at the UN. We have this 2030 agenda. Is your organization, the Hispanic Leadership Fund, addressing that at all, the 2030 agenda? It's an extension of Agenda 21. What's your stand there?
Yeah, I got to confess that the 2030 agenda is not something that's been on our radar screen.
Right. Okay. Well, it's a sustainability thing. The UN is considering the Pope is speaking at the beginning of the session where the UN is going to consider establishing this 2030 agenda as they're going to put teeth in it with enforcement. I don't know who's going to enforce it. But from now until January, it's beginning to be a real serious problem. And it supports the EPA and all of that on sustainability, on carbon footprints and all that, but worldwide, see? And
I mean, that's I mean, if we want to codify a lot of these bad laws and
exactly.
And hand them over to the UN. I mean, that would be
that's exactly what's happening, and the Pope is totally for that and support of it. See, now back.
Yeah, well, I mean, he definitely needs to bone up a little and have better people advising him on actual policy and history and what's worked and what's actually gotten people out of poverty.
Exactly.
Throughout history, because it has not been government; it's been a free market environment.
Exactly.
If there's one lesson that history has taught us, it's that.
Your issue, see, your stance on the EPA and the carbon footprint and closing down of these power plants will help his community of Catholics, and especially in this country, if we can stop
Absolutely.
This and curb it, see. But then what his position is only going to put a bigger burden on his followers. That's the problem.
Okay. Yep, that is a problem. You know, and I mean, as a Catholic myself, I mean, I have, you know, of course, a lot of love and admiration and respect for Pope Francis and that, but unfortunately he's just getting some bad advice. You know, he's not honed up on his economics and his history as he is on theology. So, you know, hopefully, there can be some folks who will advise him and present him with some of these, ideas, because I think his heart is in the right place. You know, he wants to help, you know, the poor and the unfortunate.
He's very compassionate.
You know, everything is right with that. The question is, how do you do that? And again, history has taught us that the best way is a free market, environment. That is the most fundamental piece to start out with. If we want to help people, you know, lift themselves out of poverty and create opportunity, so that every person can rise up and fulfill, you know, their whatever potential that they have.
Right. Getting back to this EPA and this, these plans that some of the states are not submitting. Now, Texas has not submitted a plan yet. Is that correct?
I believe so, yes.
So Greg Abbott, our present governor, could, pursue a policy of no submission of plan on this particular issue. That would stop it then, or what?
No, but it slows it down.
Okay.
And because there is no penalty for states not submitting plan, it's just, I think, a common sense thing to do for any governor who's concerned about the disastrous effects that the EPA regulations are going to have.
Okay. Okay, and what is the timeline on these EPA regulations? Is there deadlines for penalties, or how is that working?
Yeah, they're going to, the EPA is going to, over the course of the next several months, they're going to start pressuring the state to submit their plans. They're supposed to, you know, finalize that, in the coming months. And then they're looking to implement these, I think sometime next year, I believe that's correct, but I could be wrong on that.
During the election year, they're gonna be working on it all during the election year, I'm sure, right?
Well, you know, I hope so, because hopefully that will bring the light a little bit, you know, and get some of the candidates talking about this, because the more people find out about this, the more people get riled up about it and, you know, justifiably so.
Right. We're coming to the end of this particular segment of our program. Do you have any closing comments? You got 5 or even 10 minutes if you need it. Are there any other issues and concluding remarks you'd like to make, Mario?
Well, no, I think that we've done a great job covering. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to run here shortly,
okay.
But really enjoyed talking to you and glad to be on. Always, can't wait till my next visit to the great state of Texas. I haven't been to Austin yet, so I'm really looking forward to getting down there soon, and just really grateful for the time. I would encourage folks, again, on the EPA thing, to contact their state legislators. I know that, you know, Governor Abbott's on the right track here, but just it never hurts, you know, to make sure to encourage him, to congratulate him if he, you know, on choosing not to submit a plan, and also to the AGs, you know, who are involved, the attorneys general who are involved in this lawsuit against the EPA. That's a very important piece of it as well.
Right. And then y'all's website is HispanicLeadershipFund.org. Again, that's HispanicLeadershipFund.org. Thank you very much, Mario Lopez, president of the Hispanic Leadership Fund. We certainly appreciate all your time and efforts in this area.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on. A pleasure.
Okay, thank you. Good night.